Barbells for Boobs, where we are redefining the standard of care in breast health and improving the quality of life post-diagnosis. I'm your host, Ziana Hansen. I am the founder and the CEO of this amazing organization. Thanks for joining us. Today, we have Amy Majoros, a breast cancer survivor, a fur mommy, and a beauty and lifestyle publicist. Right? Did I get it all right?
A publicist.
PR person.
You know.
PR.
Publicist.
Publicist.
PR.
I What's
PR
the difference?
Things, people.
How are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm so glad to be here.
Oh, we are too. I think we have a small delay, so everybody listening in, just be patient with us. We're gonna get through this. There might be a little delay. There might not be. We're gonna be good. So, Amy, I'm gonna start with the same question I ask everybody on the show: is tell us who is Amy? Like,
as
where do you
as
come
I figure
from?
That out.
Yeah, just give us a full, like, where did you grow up? Where do you live now? Kind of give us that kind of just a broad stroke of your life, kind of leading up into your breast cancer diagnosis.
I grew up in Flushing, Queens, which is part of New York City, if people don't know that. And I'm actually a fifth generation New Yorker. My family has lived in New York City forever. But I actually now live in the most rural place you can imagine in upstate New York. I'm looking at the mountains in Vermont right now as I talk to you. It's a completely different life. I have been working in the beauty industry and fashion industry for half my life. I just figured that out, for 25 years. And I went to college in upstate New York and I fell in love with it. And I just found my way up here 10 years ago. I live with my husband, who is from New Zealand. And we are working on starting a lavender farm.
Wow. Okay. So you grew up in Queens. Like in where is mm-hmm. actually in, you said Flushing, Queens?
Yeah.
Is that
Flushing
where is that in
it's kind of near the airport.
Okay. So growing up in the city, to me, I'm always fascinated by people that grew up in the city that were kind of born, raised. What was that life like for you as a little girl, growing up in such a fast paced environment?
I think it's just kind of all I, it was actually a great place to grow up. It's, if you've ever seen the TV show, The Nanny, she's from Flushing. And if you ever watched that show, my husband would say that is exactly what my family is like. They're like the family on that show. Somehow I don't have such a thick Queens accent, but you know, they talk like dogs and daughters and, you know, my family are real New Yorkers. And I had a great time growing up there. As soon as I was allowed to take the subway, I was in Manhattan, because that's really where everything's happening. Queens, when I was growing up, was like growing up in the Midwest as far as New York City. We had grass and trees. It was very boring. I found it very boring. I was excited to be able to go to Manhattan and, you know, be part of the culture. And I mean, I grew up in the 80s. So Manhattan in the New York in the 80s was a really exciting time to be there.
And so you said that you moved upstate about 10 years ago. What was that change for? Like, I feel like it's such a drastic change from going, you know, from that New York City area up into upstate. And I think that people don't realize how different, like if you say you're from New York, the two totally different places you can be from, because upstate is definitely the exact opposite of New York City. And so what created that mm-hmm. pivot in your life to want to be in the mountains and away from that kind of chaos of the city?
I kind of always wanted to get out. When I was very young, I was very into nature, and we didn't have much nature around. But as I as I grew up, anytime I went on a vacation, I went to someplace with nature. Like I went camping or I went, you know, someplace where there's no cell phone reception. And when I met my husband being from New Zealand was raised in an environment where there's lots of nature and farms around. So he hated living in the city. So we were trying to figure out what we could do. We came to the area I live in now, visiting a friend, and we just looked at each other and said, we could do this. And before that, though, I was I'm like a crazy researcher. Like I have to know everything about everything. I was researching different areas of upstate New York that we might move to. And I literally stuck a pin in the map just randomly in a couple of places. And one of them is the town where we live now.
That's incredible. And where did you like for getting into like beauty and lifestyle and becoming a publicist? Like, when did that start? Did that start like right out of high school? And how influential was your upbringing in New York, like accredited towards that?
My entire family are huge beauty junkies. Like my mother, I had never seen my grandmother without makeup until she was in her 90s and I lived with her. My mother would get up at 5:30 in the morning and spend, you know, 2 hours doing her face and I would watch her. So it was always a big part of my, you know, I was less into it than them. It was always a big part of my life. And in high school, I actually got a job working. Did you ever go to a department store and there are those annoying ladies that spray you with fragrance?
Yes.
Because I was one of them. That was my after school job. I was a fragrance. They called it promotional modeling, but I was the fragrance, annoying fragrance lady. I was the youngest person. I worked at Lord & Taylor department store, which is unfortunately out of business now, but I was the youngest person working there. And I'm probably the only person that ever cut school to go to like a breakfast with the cosmetics buyers. I absolutely loved that job. But when I went to college, I remember telling my boss there, I am never going to work in this industry. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to be an academic. I'm not, you know, I want nothing to do with perfume ever again. And he said, you'll be back. And 2 years out of college, I was working at Estee Lauder. I was back. So,
wow.
You know,
well, I mean, it found you pretty young.
Yeah.
I was like, you were bred to be this.
I was.
So you get through, you go to Estee Lauder, you are working for Estee Lauder. At what point did, you know, kind of you evolve into wanting, like when you went for your screening, was this your normal mammogram screening? Were you still at Estee Lauder? Like, where were you at in your career life? Were you in New York? Were you upstate New York? Like, where were you at kind of the day before your breast cancer diagnosis?
I was upstate, living upstate, but I had started my own business. So I'm able to work remotely. I work with independent beauty and lifestyle and fashion brands. So I started that business, I don't know how many years ago, like 14 years ago. And wow. So I was able to take my work with me. And actually a couple of days, maybe 2 days before my diagnosis, I was at a spa. I was at this super luxurious, incredible spa with one of my clients. It was part of my work to go with her. but we spent the week. This is my job. We spent the weekend getting spa treatments. And there's actually a photo of me. This is the photo that maybe represents me during my cancer journey. There's a photo of me in this big fluffy robe, asleep in a chair. And I remember in the relaxation room of the spa, and I remember thinking to myself before I fell asleep, I am the luckiest person on earth. I have such an amazing life that lets me travel to places like this. I get spa treatments and I get paid for it. I'm living my dream life on my property upstate. And I was thinking to myself, I have almost everything in my life that I want. And I was so happy. It was one of the best weekends of my life. But I had found a lump in my right breast. And I even told my client, I said, you know, I found this lump. I'm going for a mammogram the day I get back. And it's probably nothing. I wasn't particularly worried. And, you know, then I went the next day and it was a little bit different of a different story.
So you went in and did you find it that weekend at the spa? First of all, do you need an assistant?
No.
Sign me up.
Sure.
I'll set up spa dates. So you didn't find the lump. Did you know about the lump before you went to the spa that weekend?
I did. I had found it about 2 weeks before and I made the appointment. It wasn't my regular mammogram, but I was almost due for my regular mammogram.
And so you had been getting annual mammograms already.
Yeah, I'm going to be 50 in a couple of days, so I've been getting them since I was 40. I know. I'm less excited.
I heard that 50's the new 20. 50's the new 20.
No. Okay. Okay.
So you went and got screening, and you said that it quickly changed. What happened on that appointment date?
So they did my mammogram and they didn't think the lump that I found was anything, but they found another lump on my left side in the area that's under my armpit. And I knew right away because the radiologist, her face, I mean, she couldn't, her face was white. And, so they said, you're going to need a biopsy. And they arranged for me to have the biopsy a few days later. And then I got taken into this room. And I've learned through my cancer journey that when they take you into a room, it's bad. Mm-hmm. So
yep.
They took me into this room and I'm sitting with this woman who's explaining the biopsy and what it's going to be like and, you know, how much it would cost if I didn't have insurance. And it didn't really sink in yet. And she said, do you have any questions? And I said, what's it like to have breast cancer? And she actually, not, you know, am I going to die? Just what's it like to have breast cancer? Right. And she said, she like was really quiet for a long time. And she looked at me and she said, You seem like the type of person that would find it a really big inconvenience. And I was horrified. I was like, an inconvenience? It's an inconvenience to have breast cancer.
Oh,
and but my I was.
Well, it,
but it's
so. I have this talk. I get to hear so many stories, and the common thing that I hear, and this is something that. It's so hard because you don't know the healthcare provider that's going to be on the other end of your screening, right? And so you don't know what their day looks like. You don't know what's going on in their life and how they communicate. Because for you, this is life altering. This is not an inconvenience. This is going to change your life forever, you know? And so it's like, it saddens me that our healthcare providers aren't more prepared to have real human conversations. And I can't imagine, and I'm not faulting the healthcare providers because I can't imagine what their day-to-day looks like and maybe how many women they've had to have that conversation with on that day. But I hope that our podcast and I hope that these stories bring more awareness to the healthcare providers on that that you're a human being. That like, at the end of the day, like talk to me as if you were sharing this with your sister or your mom or your cousin, and bringing some human perspective to such a heavy conversation. So that's my opinion.
In retrospect, there were a lot of aspects about it that were inconvenient. There was a lot of driving, mm-hmm. but that wasn't what I needed to hear.
No. So what happened? You had that conversation with her. They set you up with a biopsy. Did it take a few days to get the biopsy? And did you even know what a biopsy was? Like, did you understand that was another screening and what that process was going to look like?
I understood. I had the biopsy a few days later. The second question that I asked her, though, is I said, I remember this so well. I said, okay, I have another question. Can I go to the gym? And she just said, I don't think you should worry about that now. And then she kept, went on talking about the how the biopsy was going to go. And I said, okay, I'm not going to worry about it. But seriously, can I? Can I still go to the gym? I was thinking about that. And that's how I know I belong in with Barbells for Boobs. That was my question.
That's how I know I belong here. That's a really important question. I mean, I would have asked the same thing. I mean, that's why we exist, is we want to make sure that women do go to the gym, you know, and are empowered and have that support and have the information and knowledge to know that they're not going to hurt themselves. Right. And so I think that that's the fear with a diagnosis that cancer to me is so out of your day to day. And we're not scientists, we're not doctors, we're not oncologists. And so how do you retain that information? Because you become a student of breast cancer overnight. Like, you don't choose this path to study, and now you have to study it. And it is inconvenient, especially if you want to be able to move your body and you want to make sure you're doing it right and you're not impacting the treatment plan that they've provided for you. So trust me.
Yeah.
This is why we are here. I get it. So you had the biopsy a few days later.
Mm-hmm. And then I had to wait.
Tell us.
And waiting worst part of this whole thing.
It was the worst. So had it set in, like, at what point, was there a point in at all that you were like in your own gut feeling like, I have breast cancer?
As soon as I saw the radiologist's face after the biopsy, she looked even more upset. And I said to her, I'm not going to worry about anything until there's something to worry about. And she looked at me and she said, that's a really good attitude. You can do that if it makes you feel good. And I was like, oh, she knows that I have cancer. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty sure at that point.
And how much longer did it take them to actually give you your diagnosis?
A week? That was a terrible week. I live in upstate New York. Things are slow. A week.
And when they did inform you, did they have you go in? Did they call you? What was, I mean, a lot of women remember this, that where they were at, the time, the date. Can you give us that knowledge on when they did let you know that you had breast cancer?
They sent me to see my GP, who I love and, you know, I've seen for years. And as soon as they said, you're going to go in and see her, I knew. And I brought my husband with me and, you know, I went and saw her and he came with me. He came with me to all my appointments, which, thank God, because I didn't hear anything when they were telling me. None of it sunk in. I think that's very common. And she said, I'm really sorry, but it is breast cancer. And she hugged me and she said, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. We're going to beat this thing and you're going to be fine. And I believed it. I really did. I wasn't thinking I was going to die. But we got back to the car and I said to my husband, you know, I slammed the door and I said, we're not going to tell anyone. When this is over, I don't ever want to talk about it again. And if anybody buys me anything pink, I'm going to punch them. So I was, you know, I was upset. I have everything pink, by the way.
I know. I was going to say, I feel like that's a pretty, like, common response.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it, and I always look at breast cancer because I hate the color pink too. So I'm right with you. But I always, before I was impacted by breast cancer, and I always looked at this pink ribbon movement as like, man, they're kind of annoying. Like, I really had my own judgment on this pink movement. And now I get it. Now I understand that, like, for me, it's not a color. It's something so much deeper, because what happens to a woman, what you witness your, what I witnessed my best friend go through, what I witnessed my sister go through, it like, it tears you apart in a way that you can't describe. And so you take a lot of pride in being a voice for the community of women impacted by breast cancer. And I take a huge amount of pride in it. And so, but I can see in the beginning, I was like, if you put pink on me, I swear. Like, yeah. When my best friend was diagnosed, I was like, we're not doing this pink thing, right? We're going to make it a different color.
No.
How did your husband handle it?
I know that when I came home from the original mammogram, I called him from the car and I said, I had a bad mammogram. I need to sit in the car for a few minutes and just process everything. And then I'm going to come home. And when I came home, his eyes were red. So I knew that he was upset. But my husband was amazing throughout the whole thing. Just amazing.
I think that a lot of times we don't talk about the caregivers, you know, and the people that are right next to you during treatment and during that entire process that is life altering and inconvenient. And so the person that's there while your life is turned upside down overnight and changed overnight, and you kind of have limited control on what that looks like, the person sitting next to you, they've got to be a rock, you know. They're not, it's not going to work out, you know. So so what did your treatment look like, and how long did it take for them to provide you kind of your stage and what was next and what was to come?
Well, I had actually a very weird case. So when I got the biopsy and they found that the cancer was in my armpit, they thought it was a lymph node. And it was 1.5 centimeters, which I guess is a very big lymph node. And they were very, I could, you know, I always think these are people that deal with cancer patients every day. And they were looking at me like I was going to die. They were worried. And so they set me up with a meeting with a surgeon and with an oncologist. And I love my doctors. I went to see, you know, I went with my husband to see the surgeon. And I remember her saying, we're expecting to find a larger tumor in the breast. And that this is, you know, this is not the primary tumor. And you might be stage two if we're very, very lucky. But I sort of felt through my cancer journey that when someone said something like you might be stage two, they're thinking you're stage three if you're lucky. Mm-hmm. So then I went to see the oncologist, and that was the worst meeting. But in that meet, because it was terrifying, and she was talking about, you know, I was going to very likely have chemo first and then surgery. And, you know, they weren't sure, you know, I didn't hear what they said after that. They might have said radiation. I don't know. But she did say something that was positive, although my husband had to tell me about it. I didn't hear it. She said there's also a possibility. Oh, and she told me that my breast cancer was estrogen positive, which she called it an old lady cancer. She said, you know, you're really young. I was 48. You're really young to get this cancer. But, you know, you're not so young that, you know, to be getting breast cancer. But she said there is a chance, and it's a really slim chance. I don't think this is what is happening, that tumor in your armpit could be breast tissue, and that could be the primary tumor. And if it is, we're looking at a very different situation, but it's a very slim chance. It's probably 1 in 100,000, but it's possible. So, you know, I didn't hear, my husband heard that. And I think he signed up for an account on breastcancer.org and started asking, which was a big thing for him to do. My husband is very shy. Mm-hmm. I can't believe he did that. He started asking questions of the other women and saying, you know, does anybody else have axillary breast cancer? And, you know, he didn't really get answers because it's very, very rare. So I wasn't hopeful that that was what was going on.
but
it was there as a possibility.
I think it's that's a great point to bring up, and this is why I love to dissect and really talk through the treatments and what they found, because again, if another woman hears this and can hear your story and kind of what you all had to go through and how you made those decisions and the questions to ask and how to prepare to speak to somebody as scary as an oncologist. I've sat in the rooms with the oncologist and I seem to go blank every time they would sit there, because I'm like, what did you just say? like always bring two, maybe three people with you, because it's, you know, it's overwhelming. And the language, it's a totally new language and terminology that you have to really understand. Like, I'm fortunate that I have a background in kinesiology and I understand what auxiliary is.
Oh, wow. So, I didn't know what that was.
Like, I understand that. But yeah, like a normal person that hasn't studied anatomy or kinesiology would never know what that is. And so, how long did it, what was the first thing they had to do to figure out if the tumor in your lymph was breast cancer or was actually cancerous?
I'm so fortunate that they did a lot of testing, because I have read online about other women who actually, I mean, spoiler alert, it was axillary breast cancer. It was stage one, and I'm very, very lucky. But I've read it, other women that had the same thing, and they just sent them right to chemo, assuming that there was that there was something else going on. I had an MRI. That was the next step. And they did find another lump in both my left breast and my right breast. But they weren't thinking, they were very confused. They said, we don't think this is anything. So I had to get two more biopsies. I was pretty bruised up at this point. And,
oh my gosh. After the how did,
I looked
for you for, So for me, number one, the message here is advocate. If they're not unsure or if there's any discrepancy in what they're finding, like ask for more tests. You have the right to get more tests. And so did your oncologist advocate for the MRI?
She did. They wanted me to have more. I had so many tests. After the MRI, and they sent me to have a MUGA scan, because they were still thinking I was going to probably need chemo. They sent me to have a bone scan. And what was the other scan? A CT scan. So I basically got every scan. And I remember my oncologist saying, well, we just want to make sure the cancer hasn't spread. It's a formality. But I don't think it was a formality. I saw these people's faces. They were very concerned. And I remember getting the results of the scans. And my oncologist assistant, who's really sweet, or her nurse, called me. It was Friday night at 5:00. And I, some reason, I missed the call. So she left a message. And I listened to the message. And I still remember it was, hi, I have great news. Your cancer has not spread to the rest of your body. Isn't that fantastic? You go have a great weekend. That was exactly how it sounded.
Oh my gosh. Like, thank you. I'm gonna have a beer.
This is awesome.
Wow. How long from the time that you were your original biopsy, so you kind of getting that week out diagnosis till when they actually had a treatment plan ready for you? Like, how long did all those tests take?
I think it was a month, maybe a month and a week. It was a long time.
And what was the treatment plan that they finally implemented for you?
A lumpectomy and radiation.
Woo.
Very different from what I thought it would be. There's a wig in the next room that I got because they were after the MRI. I had an appointment on a Monday to go see my surgeon to talk about getting the chemo port put in. And when I got there, the surgeon said, change of plans. We're not putting in a chemo port. We're just going to do the lumpectomy and see what this is, because the MRI came back and you don't have another tumor. So we're just going to go in there and see if this is breast tissue. and no chemo pork. I was supposed to get the chemo port on that Thursday, and instead I had my lumpectomy.
And how long was your radiation? How many?
21 days.
How many sessions? Yeah, 21 days.
21.
So again, I like to educate people here. So when we say 21 days of radiation, I want to, she makes it sound so easy. It's 21 days. It is rigorous. It is 21 days, yeah. Like every day, right? Like not... every day going in, getting your skin
7:15 appointment. 7:15 or 8:15 appointment. Driving 1 hour and 15 minutes mm-hmm. each way. And the whole thing takes 10 minutes. But yeah, and being more tired than you've ever been in your life, and sleep does not help you.
Oh, my goodness. And so where are you at now in your treatment? Everything is so recovered from the radiation. No more surgeries. Are you completely, in your eyes, done with your treatment of breast cancer?
I finished treatment in the fall of 2019. And mm-hmm. then I had... I actually had two separate surgeries. I had lymph nodes removed to be tested a couple of weeks after they took my tumor out and determined it was breast tissue. They wanted to first know what the tumor was before they did the axillary dissection. So mm-hmm. I had two surgeries, and they were through the same incision, and my body, my arm and my whole, my shoulder did not like that. I couldn't straighten my arm for months. So after that was physical, lots and lots of physical therapy. Mm-hmm. But I'm really fortunate, because I keep thinking about my treatment was supposed to be much different, much longer, much harder. So even though, I still went through a lot, it was nothing compared to what I thought I would have to go through. So, I feel very lucky. It changed kind of the way.
Yeah, we don't talk about this often on the podcast, but I think it's an important topic to get your thoughts on. Do you have any guilt that your treatment yes. wasn't as bad or as hard? Or do you ever feel like maybe I'm not a survivor enough. Like, I didn't lose my hair. I didn't have to go through chemo. Kind of talk through that. Kind of, they call it survivor guilt when your treatment's not as bad, or you actually survived breast cancer.
My childhood best friend had died 2 years before my diagnosis of pancreatic cancer. And
I'm so sorry.
She lived for a month and a half. She was 47. And I still think, why was I spared and not her? She has a son. Mm-hmm. I think, why am I here? And she's not here.
Yeah. No,
I feel.
Go ahead.
Oh, I do feel like when I see other women, I feel like I didn't have chemo. I didn't go through as much. And I learned everything about chemo because I was supposed to have it. And I feel like, why did I get lucky? I have this type of cancer. I have axillary breast cancer. That is so rare. There's been studies done on it. It's so rare. I mean, they wanted to rule out everything just to make sure, but they thought there's absolutely no chance that this was going to happen. Why did I get so lucky and others don't?
Mm-hmm. It's a real feeling. And my best friend, the inspiration of Barbell Sharib Sessi, she said it the best in her podcast, and it was such a beautiful perspective that I had never heard. and I've shared it a few times on the podcast, but for her, because she's had this guilt because she didn't have chemo, she didn't have to lose her hair. And she, I remember even just starting Barbells for Boobs, it was like, well, I'm not really a breast cancer survivor. Like, I just had a lumpectomy and I had, you know, like, and in my head, I'm like, but you had breast cancer. Like, this is, and so what she's learned and what she taught me was that we as a breast cancer community should be super excited when a woman finds breast cancer so soon and so early that they don't need this aggressive treatment, that we should be celebrating that their treatment is not as aggressive, and because we found it early. And so it, as long as we're advocating more and we're bringing more awareness and education, and the younger that we're talking to women and little girls, the sooner they're gonna find out and the less aggressive treatment they have to endure, you know? And so I thought it was just such an amazing perspective, instead of, you know, kind of flipping that guilt on its head and being like, no, I'm proud of my treatment. Proud that you found it early and you acted, you found a lump and you went in and you got it checked and they found it early, you know, and you were getting your regular mammograms. That's the beauty of your treatment. That's the triumph that you have. So congratulations.
Thank you.
So how did you find Barbells for Boobs in this process?
In a funny way, actually. I had a client that was doing a promote. They had socks that were, they wanted to give back to breast cancer, to a breast cancer charity. I actually connected them with another charity called Sharsheret, which helps women and families that are dealing with breast and ovarian cancer. And it's mostly for the Jewish community. I mean, I'm Jewish. It's mostly for the Jewish community. It was started for the Jewish community because religion, I don't want to say, I hope I'm not saying this wrong, but in the very religious Jewish community, it's not talked, you would never talk about having breast cancer. You would never talk about illness. So they wanted to help those women, but they help everybody. And it's a really wonderful organization. But I wanted to do something else. And this was while I was going through my diagnosis, that I'm setting up this whole marketing program around breast cancer. Breast cancer is my life 24/7 at this point, and not just because I'm diagnosed. I wanted to do something on social media with breast cancer. So what we did was I looked for people in the breast cancer community, for survivors that were doing cool things, and we were going to interview them on the company's website and give them, you know, a whole bunch of socks and goodies. And when I was doing my research, I found Sandra, who is, what is her Instagram handle?
The Fighting Fox.
Yeah, I found her. And I didn't know what Barbells for Boobs was, and I kept seeing Barbells for Boobs on her, you know, on her feed. And I found her and I thought, well, I can't approach her to do this interview because she's such a badass and I'm too intimidated. So I didn't approach her. But she's how I found out about Barbells for Boobs. And then I became really curious, what is Barbells for Boobs? And I kept, you know, I kept seeing all these different really badass women. And I was like, oh, that's, you know, that looks really cool. That's something I, you know, can't be part of. You know, really awesome. And so I kind of just followed you guys from there after we did the whole marketing thing.
Did you connect with Sandra? Did you actually like?
No, I should. Are you too? You I'm should, still totally. So intimidated by her. I should tell her, like, no. If I ever met her in person, that would be, you know, that would be like meeting a celebrity.
Oh my goodness. I'll have to tell her she has to listen to this podcast. Like, she's going to have to listen.
She's a fan. Like, I'm a huge fan.
And then, but then you got into our programs. You're in our programs. You participate in our I see you on SugarWatt. I see you logging. So tell us about your adventure or your exploration going into fitness and becoming one of the badasses that you see at Barbells for Boobs.
I don't know. Well, before my diagnosis, I was into fitness like on and off in my life. Like I didn't play sports, but I met a girl that lifted weights in college. And one day she said, like, want to go to the gym and see what I do? And I was like, oh, OK, I don't think that'll be for me. And I went and I was instantly like, oh, this is it. This is my thing. But, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't lift heavy. I didn't know what I was doing. So I was really into fitness when I was, you know, in my 20s. And then I kind of fell out of it. And then I was into it again in my 30s. And then I met my husband and sat on the couch for like 8 years. And then when we moved upstate, I was really bored. And it just seemed like a thing to do to join a gym. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, well, at least it'll be activity during the cold winter and I'll be inside. And, you know, that was, I think, 2014. And I was just like, I was hooked ever since. And I, you know, I tried a little bit of everything. And I was just like, it became a huge part of my life.
Yeah. Fitness does that. It really kind of, it becomes a part of your ethos, right? Like once you find out that movement can mm-hmm. heal in so many ways, like it healed to me, it's where mm-hmm. I go for, it's my sanctuary. You know, I feel like this is where I can get mentally stable, emotionally stable, and also take care yeah. of my body. Like you get one body, right? And so, and I think that awareness it increases after a cancer diagnosis, especially. It's even more yes. relevant. I feel like it's more of like, I need to be more proactive and I need to ensure that my health is at its top notch because, you know, something came in and invaded your body. Something came in and tried to take your health away. Right. And so how yeah. can I make sure that I'm on top of it and I'm more proactive? So, that's yeah. And so now you are Barbells for Boobs community member.
Yes.
You can proudly say that. I'm going to make you
the courage. I finally got up the nerve to email through the website. And I remember saying to my husband, I thought everybody did CrossFit. So I was like, I don't do CrossFit. And they won't let me in because I don't do CrossFit. So I don't know. But I got the interview. And I remember saying to my husband, oh my God, I want to be in this group so much. What if they don't let me in? I'm going to be crushed. But it happened. So
it happened. Yeah. You don't. So here's a disclaimer. You do not need to be a CrossFitter to be a part of Barbells for Boobs.
I think that
you have to be. Yes. Yes. I think the criteria to be a part of our community is you have to just be, I think, mentally, emotionally available to yourself to be better, right? Like you have to want to be better mm-hmm. Because what we do is we provide the tools for you to be better. But if you don't want to be better, you know, there's not much we can, that has to come from inside, right? And we can't decide that for you. We can have all the resources, we can build a great community for you, but unless you're ready to take that on, like it's a mindset, right? That that we want to cultivate and keep at it. So I know that was probably a huge accomplishment to join our community. We love having you. Keisha and Jonna speak so highly of you. It's really, really cool.
I love them.
They're amazing, right?
I love everybody. Everyone is amazing.
It's so cool. What would you say, what was the biggest lesson from your breast cancer diagnosis?
Oh, there were two. I have two things, I guess. Right as I was finishing radiation, I met this woman. I do volunteer work for an arts organization. And there was a show and I was just babysitting the gallery. And there was this woman who came in and she was the artist's mother, but I didn't know that. And I don't know how it ended up that I told her or she heard me talking about it, and she sat down with me. She put her hand on my hand and she said, I'm really sorry that you have breast cancer. I'm glad your treatment is almost over, but I have to tell you, your life is about, I'm a 30 year survivor. Your life is about to get so much better and I'm really happy for you because you're going to be so happy. You won't believe it. And she was right.
Wow. Isn't that, that's wild. That's like deep. Insight. And I can understand that by I'm not a breast cancer survivor. I've been a spectator for years, for over a decade. I've sat on the sidelines. I've watched women get their diagnosis. I've watched women go through treatment. I've heard dozens and dozens of stories. And the one thing that I continue to hear is I'm better after. Like, my life is better now. And I think that it does give us such a perspective on life, right? And so that for you to get that insight early on and then be able to say she was right now is like, it's a gift.
At the time I thought she was nuts, but you know, nuts. At the time I was like, what?
This is inconvenient, actually.
This is inconvenient. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, is there anything else you would like to share about your story, your journey, anything that you want to share with our community?
The other thing that I learned is not to be afraid of small things, because I was, I think, afraid of a lot of things in my life. Like, I love to wear vintage clothing, and like, I always thought, well, I looked like too weird and I shouldn't wear that. Or maybe I would be, before cancer, I would never go join a CrossFit box. I would be so scared, so intimidated. But now I after cancer, I think of things like, well, you had something to really be afraid of. Cancer is something really scary. So if you're going to be afraid of something, make sure it's something really, you know, something to really be afraid of. Don't be afraid to join a gym. Don't be afraid to try something new. Don't be afraid to, you know, don't be afraid to wear something, because there's nothing to be afraid of after you've had this big scare. It just teaches you that these are all small things and you should not be afraid.
How long for that lesson specifically, how long after your diagnosis did that really actually go into tangible practice?
I don't know. It took a while. It didn't happen right away.
Yeah. But I think that you can confidently probably say now you practice that.
Yeah. I just remember when I went, you know, like when I went and said, I'm going to join the gym. I used to go to the Y and work out. And then I was like, I don't know why I wasn't scared. And people would say to me, oh my God, you're doing that. That's really hard. I mean, aren't you intimidated, nervous? And I was like, it never occurred to me to be scared. And I had you guys and I had tried, you know, I had been doing the workouts. So I kind of knew what I was getting into. But, and I did it anyway, but I did it anyway. Yeah, I knew what I was getting into. I just, like, it didn't occur to me to be nervous or scared about, you know, and I think, like, I think since in the past year, I'm much more myself. Like, I'm much less afraid to show people who I really am and less worried that they're not going to, you know, maybe they won't like it, or maybe I'll do something and one of my clients will get upset because I don't pick up the phone at 6 a.m. and they'll fire me. And now it's like, you know what? If my client fires me because I won't answer the phone at 6 a.m, that's not a client I need. And I should not be afraid of that.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I think that we, as women, we have, We identify ourselves in so many different circumstances, right? So for you with your client, I actually had this revelation with my own identity crisis of I get a lot of crap from people because I'm very slow at responding, right? I'm very, you know, like...
I was like, why would anybody give you crap?
No,
they shouldn't not be.
It's more my brother, but so what I've come to, like, I have these like mantras that I write down every day of like, I'm strong, I'm smart. I have my little mantras. And so I finally told myself, I said, Z, on your mantras, there's nothing on your mantras that say that you're responsive. person. It's okay. Doesn't make you bad. It's just not something that you strive for every day.
It's fine.
It's fine. You can wait, bro. I'll text you when I'm done with work and homeschool and working out.
And your life, yeah.
Well, I think that not being afraid, has there been anything since your diagnosis that has made you afraid? Like that has really scared you?
Oh, God. I had to have some more tests because they found after my cancer treatment was, you know, the active treatment was over, they found nodules on my lungs and something on my liver. So I had to have more tests. And I was, you know, I was scared because I thought they did all the scans. I'm fine. But now they found new things. But it ended up not being anything. And the woman who did the scan on my liver, she actually said to me in the office, there's going to be a radiologist who drives a much nicer car than I do, who's going to analyze this and eventually tell you that this is nothing. But you've been through so much that I'm just going to tell you right here, this is nothing. It's a cyst. You don't have to worry about it at all.
Oh,
but that scared me.
Yes, but gosh, bless her for not letting you have to go home.
That was amazing that she did that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And broke several laws in doing so, I'm sure.
You know what? I'm okay with. She treated you like you were a human being. She treated you like you were her sister, and that's.
It was wonderful.
I don't care what law she broke. She treated you like a human being.
It was so wonderful.
Wow, amazing. Well. This was awesome. I need to come to New York now and see these mountains.
No, I need to come to you.
The overlook.
No, it's cold here. Don't come here. Yeah. I want to. Don't come here. It's cold.
Summertime.
It's beautiful here.
No, then it's hot. In summer?
Yeah.
Is the summer nice or is it like hot?
Oh,
okay.
Well, like in New York City, it's sticky, you know, but here we're surrounded by lakes in mountains. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I remember when I went to college in New York and I moved out there. Wow. I want to say in like right when there was like snowstorms, it had to be like February or something. I don't know. Oh. And I remember telling myself like, don't worry, Z, the summer's right around the corner. Like you can get through these snowstorms. You're fine. You're tough. And then the summer came and I was like, what is this?
Wow, it's so humid and hot.
it was not. I'm a Cali girl. Like this was not summer. And then finally September hit and I was like, oh, this is nice. And then it just starts snowing again by, you know.
Yeah, that's basically like, it.
It's like I'm not meant to be in New York, but go back to Cali.
I don't know if I am either, but I'm here.
You're here. It sounds lovely where you're at, though. You just need to find like winter California home.
Exactly. Yes. I need January and February, not here. Those are the two bad months. Everything else is nice.
Yeah, I can imagine. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Can our community follow you? Do you want to share your Instagram channel with the community in case they want to keep up with your story?
Well, I started a personal Instagram because my Amy Majora's Instagram is just about it's just work. It's just like, here's my client on Good Morning America. So, but I started a personal one. I haven't really posted to it yet, but I'm Perfume Warrior Princess, which is a nickname someone gave me.
I feel like that's full circle from where we started on this conversation.
It is. Can't get away from it.
Well,
perfume.
You can't get away from it. No. Mm-mm. Well, Amy, thank you so much for joining us. Big shout out to the team here at Barbells for Boobs that are all a part of the production of the podcast. And the life lesson from Amy today is don't be afraid. Look at that little thing that you're afraid of today. Analyze, what are you afraid of right now? And just go do it. It's okay. No one's going to hurt you. And if someone judges you, that's their problem. And that's exactly. It. That's Lights Out for Barbells for Boobs. Amy, once again, thank you so much. We love you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Me too.